Balance the Sky on Your Head by Helena Olufsen. This story appears in issue 94 of Willow Springs. That morning, my son was about to become famous, and I spent 40 minutes ironing one shirt, trying to think of a reason to stay home. My wife's Ford Fiesta smelled like cigarettes. It moaned like something wounded when I settled into the passenger seat. Beside me, my wife jingled the keys in the ignition. The engine coughed, then died out. My wife straightened her back, building confidence. She tried the engine again. It hiccuped a few times. Died. We shared a look. Right about now, our son would be outside the Copenhagen Stadium, a sponsor-tacked duvet coat over his football attire, clutching a pair of steaming styrofoam cups, wondering if we'd show. Which we wouldn't. We both understood. We were too late for the bus, which came through the forest only once per hour. A taxi would take too long to get here. By the time we'd reached the stadium, our son, and with him, our tickets, would have had to go inside. My wife's face mirrored my own guilt, and beneath the guilt, hidden so carefully in the fragile lines around her mouth that another man might have missed it, there was that other thing, relief. For now, I focused on the guilt, the sting of our absence. Our son didn't know it yet, but his parents were going to miss his first big game, the one his coach had said would make him a young star, a phenomenon. I didn't like the way the coach talked about my son, the way he boasted, practically drooling, his hooligan joy as he slapped my back with his bare paw of a hand, so hard I couldn't breathe, pointing out my son on the pitch, knees green, chocolate curls dripping sweat, as if I couldn't spot my own kid, saying his name like he was invincible. Machine boy, unerring, unfeeling, as if he didn't spend every night before a game crouched over the toilet, vomiting from anxiety. I didn't like that my son was now alone with that man, treating him like that, a slab of meat in a slaughterhouse, a product about to hit the shelves. I knew my wife didn't like it either, because she lit a cigarette and smoked it in the driver's seat, staring hard at nothing. The Ford Fiesta filled with smoke. My wife finished one cigarette, then another. When the time came, she turned on the radio and fiddled with the stations until she found one broadcasting the game. We huddled together and listened. Most of it I didn't understand, but I understood enough, the weight of it. By the end of the game, my freshly ironed shirt was splattered with tears, and the damage was done. Our son had become famous. After a mournful silence, my wife and I went inside and curled up on a sofa to wait for our son to come home, trying to calm ourselves with crosswords and nature poetry. I woke up in the deep night to the front door creaking. The cold breath of the forest whined through the house. The door slammed shut and the walls shook. I didn't open my eyes, just kept limp on the sofa, my throat dry, my mouth full of sleep. My wife lay on top of me, her chest heaving against mine. I sensed him enter the living room, the pads of his feet, a wash of booze, the ghost of loud music. He had been out celebrating. He came to the sofa and stood over us for a long time, a strain in his breathing. He swallowed hard a few times. The house was so very still around him, so deep down the well of night. I didn't let on that I was awake. If I had, he would have wanted to talk, and this wasn't the right moment to talk. I needed more time to make the transition from sleep to wakefulness with some grace. He needed more time to sober up. We both needed my wife, his mother, awake and in full command of her sensibilities, her easy affection, to mediate between us, the subtle telepathy she shared with our son, the intuition of the womb, how they would understand things about each other without asking. I must have fallen back asleep, because when I blinked, it was morning and my son was gone.